This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Voice, preserving our stories. Join Caroline Vogels and Jess Moore for an insight into the lives of our community elders. Joy 94.9 gratefully acknowledges the support of the Victorian Government and Public Record Office Victoria for making this project possible.
Senior Constable Gabby Tyack was born in Sydney in the early 70s and was raised by her mum and dad with three brothers. Gabby joined the New South Wales Police Force, or Police Service as it was known then, in 1999, and 3 years later relocated to Victoria, both for her career and also to follow her heart. 4 years after joining Victoria Police, Gabby became a gay and lesbian liaison officer, commonly called a GLO, following in the big boots of Melinda Edwards. Gabby has been a full-time GLO for about the past 4.5 years. And Gabby's driving passion is to help people, to make a difference and to be a voice of the GLBTI community. In addition to working with the gay and lesbian community, Gabby also works closely with VicPol new and emerging community liaison officers to help protect vulnerable people from family violence and encouraging all people to report violence and crime in general. In 2008, Gabby became a regular guest on the Joy 94.9 GLOW show, now called the Victoria Police Community Hour, on Wednesdays at 12 o'clock. And Gabby's always trying to reach a wider audience to spread the message, report crime, and you can feel safe by speaking with a GLO. Outside her day job, Gabby enjoys life with her partner Jewel of 11 years, spending time tending to their menagerie, which includes the traditional birds, German shepherd dogs, a cat, but also a goat and a snake. And Gabby also follows the Geelong footy team, and if time permits, love spending time enjoying beach and bush. I believe Gabby Tyack is the person everyone would love to have as their best friend. And she joins my co-host Jess and I on our voice. Welcome, Gabby.
Wow, what an intro.
And welcome, Jess.
Thanks for coming in today, Gabby. It's nice to actually put a face to the voice. I've listened to your show here on Joy a few times. So it's nice to see people in real life.
It is.
Well, I'm a real person.
She is.
What we like to do here on Our Voice is take our listeners through a little bit of a journey of your life. So maybe we could start off with some sort of childhood stories.
Life in Sydney with three brothers.
Yeah, well, I guess I grew up in Lane Cove. I don't know whether you know that area. It's not too far from the harbour and from the city, just across the other side of the bridge.
Beautiful part of town with a national park.
Yeah, and I've always liked going for walks in the bush and with my dog. So from a young age, I always had a dog. So when we lived at Lane Cove, there was Lane Cove National Park, which is a bit too far for me to walk to as a child, but just down the street was some bush, so I'd always be down in the bush even when I was young. And then we moved out to the northern beaches and French's Forest, and that gave me opportunity to get down to the beach and also the bush around those areas. So always had a dog with me, and even now we live quite close to the Yuyang, so we're always up there with walking the dogs. So it was an interesting time growing up. I had three brothers. I was the second child. Me and my older brother were fairly separate because he sort of did his thing, I did mine, and then the two younger ones came along when I was about 7 and 8. So I kind of had a childhood to myself, but had great neighbour friends and would climb over the fence and play with the neighbours all the time. And
sensational.
It was quite a good time growing up.
Yeah. So your influence to get into the police force, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't really know. The only thing I can think of is that I liked watching police shows on TV.
As we were.
And I'd finished high school, I'd gone to uni and got a degree and just really didn't know what to do with my life and was working in a pub and then thought I really need to do something, something that was a career. And then watching all the shows, I thought, well, why don't I give it a go? It looks quite exciting on TV. And then I joined, and I've been here ever since, changing forces and moving interstate, but basically doing the same sort of job.
So what did your mum and dad think about you becoming a police officer? Were they for it or scared? Or
I really don't remember what they thought. I remember they came to my graduation down in Goulburn.
Oh, wow, was it freezing or was it boiling at that time?
It was warm. It was in December, so it was quite warm. But, I think they were quite proud of me, and my mum was proud when I became a GLOW and started being on radio and having stories in the paper and things like that. So, yeah, I think they were proud. I was sort of... There's always the boys that they're more proud of sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
You know, when you're the girl, you're sort of, oh, well, you know, you do what you do, but the boys are the best.
So let's go back a little bit further before that to schooling. What was school like for you?
I loved high school, strangely. I went to Mara Sisters College, which is a Catholic school, beautiful area in Woolwich. So, I've always loved views and bush, so it was right on the Langcove River, and well, not really the river, but the harbour, and beautiful bush around it. Yeah. So
what's not to love about that?
And a non-Catholic in a Catholic school was kind of interesting too.
Non-Catholic in a Catholic school. Tell us how that works.
Yeah, I was the same situation. I loved it. Yeah, I loved all the ceremony and mass and having time off to go and pray.
Exactly. That's what it was all about, wasn't it? Well, I had a bit of experience with it because my neighbours that I grew up with were Catholic. So they would go to church and I would think, well, why are they going? I don't want to miss out. So sometimes I go to church with them, and particularly around Christmas and Easter and things like that, I'd be at church. So when I got to the high school, I kind of knew what it was about, but still it was quite a long process of, you know, knowing when to stand and knowing when to say amen. And yeah, I did all through high school too. And then should I be going up to get communion? Because I'm not Catholic, but I did because I wanted to try it.
You don't want to be the only one sitting down.
So did you have to go to confession?
No, I never did.
You're picking all the good bits.
Yeah, I don't think they did that there. It wasn't a boarding school.
Yeah, no, but I think they normally do. They love that, you know.
We didn't do it either.
Oh, really?
I didn't have anything to confess.
Oh, not at all. No, I'm sure not. Must have been. I was probably taking up all the time because my mum was the flip side. I was the Catholic in the non-Catholic school.
Oh, wow.
So you had to go out and get your confirmation practice and communion practice and then come in, and everybody else had heaps of fun, and I was in Anyway, we won't even go there.
Yeah, well, my mum wanted me to go to the Catholic school. She wasn't Catholic. She later became Catholic, but she didn't want me to go to the government school at Hunters Hill High, which I think was a pretty good school, but at the time had a bad reputation. Mm. And I guess she didn't want me, you know, in a school with all the boys and
rough and tumble.
You know, who knows what goes on there.
Yeah,
so little she put me among all the girls, which I quite like. Thank you very much.
So you've brought a song along, and it's called Xanadu. And it's from Olivia Newton-John. And why did you pick that song?
Well, growing up, my mum loved Olivia Newton-John, and she would always have her music playing around the house. And so from that, I grew to love her. And I lost my mum almost 6 years ago now, and it just reminds me of her. And I think it's a beautiful song. I remember being in primary school singing it with my friends, and it's probably been my favourite song since.
Sounds good. Let's have a listen.
Joy 94.9.
Our voice. Preserving the stories of our community elders. Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Our Voice with Jess Caroline, and our special guest is Senior Constable Gabby Tyack from Victoria Police. And we just heard Xanadu, and we're just calming down after skating around the studio. Well, I was witnessing all the skating around the studio. I have enough trouble just standing up. Now, we've heard a little bit about the childhood. So we've hit the 90s. You're in your early 20s. Take yourself back. What was happening for you around then?
Well, I did sneak into a Madonna concert. Yeah, I chatted to the security guard. I was a bit of a stalker of Madonna back then, but a well-behaved one. I didn't do anything wrong except sneaking into her rehearsals.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty interesting.
Absolutely. And then, tell us a bit more about that.
How do you do that? Yeah. I'm going to write notes.
Yeah.
Well, I was working, I think, at... I must have been in the Longueville Hotel at the time. So I had interesting hours and night hours. So in the day, I'd just basically go to, I think it was Double Bay, where she was staying, and just sort of hang out there. And I met a good friend who I'm still very good friends with now, who he lives in Melbourne as well. So we became Madonna stalkers together. well behaved.
I love that a police officer's talking about stalking. It's great.
Well, while the other people were there, they were the crazy stalkers who were, you know, she'd go out in her car and they'd go and shake the car and get around it. I'd just stand there going, oh, that's disgusting. Yeah. How could you do that? So I was the well-behaved stalker.
Yeah.
That's the truth. But we also went jogging with her when she went jogging down to Bondi Beach. So I ended up taking a photo of her jogging when we were running along beside her, and a security guard came and took the camera off me and threw it on the ground and all that sort of stuff. So got a bit of a story in the paper, Sun Herald or whatever it is up there. I can't remember. And Triple M interview the next day. I was, it was early 20s. So yeah. I was excited and starstruck, and it was something that I'll always remember. I've got some good photos of it too.
And is she as gorgeous in the flesh?
Well, she had her short hair then.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been a fan of short hair. I've grown up now and it's fine, but in those days I was...
Stabbing the heart here for the two short hair.
No, I'm looking around the room. No, but I've changed. I've grown up. But at that stage I thought, you know, what? The time you come to Australia and you cut your hair short, it's like a little cap.
Yeah.
So she, gorgeous and tiny.
Yeah.
Absolutely tiny and fantastic. Also in the 20s, I was coming to terms with being a lesbian and not being able to really tell people other than my best friend that I liked girls.
Yeah.
And had a relationship with a man because I thought that was the easiest thing to do, and a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately it was a six-year relationship, but it ended up being quite violent.
Oh, wow.
So that was a tough time, and not being able to tell anyone about that. So I think, you know, a lot of us who are in the GLBTI community go through this sort of thing where we can't be our true self, so we live a life that we think everyone else will accept. And, you know, because I did that, I put myself into, you know, a lot of danger, went through a lot of heartache, physical injuries. I honestly think I was going to end up dead in that relationship. Mm. So I have my own understanding about family violence and, you know, why people don't report. And at the end of that relationship, I joined New South Wales Police. So I was a police officer and still in that situation. So I really understand the psychology behind women staying in violent relationships.
Yep. How did you extract yourself out of that relationship?
Well, it was a really long process to leave because at the very end I'd met my partner now down here in Victoria, and I was in Sydney. So it gave me an excuse to leave because I found it really difficult. When you're in this kind of relationship, you kind of feel responsible for the other person. Even though they're treating you so terribly, you feel like you have to take care of them and that they can't sort of live without you.
Yeah.
So it was a struggle for me to leave, and I kind of left and went back a few times. And it ended basically because he'd found out about my partner.
Oh, wow.
And we had a big argument. He left with my car, and I had to catch two buses and a train to get to work. And I was walking to work at the last part of the journey, and he drove up beside me and said, oh, we need to talk. And basically that was when he said, well, you're not going to see anyone again. And off he drove with me in the car. And I ended up getting out of the car and running off and hailing down a car on the road and going to the police station closest to where we were. I was in uniform. I was on my way to work. So I honestly think that if I didn't get out of that car, I could have ended up another statistic because I know how the cycle of violence works, and I know where he was at mentally over those years and where he'd got to at that point. So thank God I got away.
Yeah, thank
God. So, you know, that was a hard time in my life.
And I know you're such an animal lover. Did you have pets at the time?
Yeah.
Because that can be a big part for a difficulty to leave a relationship too, knowing that you can leave your... You know, well, it's for some people, their children, but
furry babies
as well. So was that another problem for you?
It was. I ended up leaving. I had a dog and he had a dog. It was together, but we had our own dogs, but I left them together with him. Yeah. And I went back and got my snake and pretty much left everything I owned apart from, you know, one bag and the snake.
Yeah.
All my photographs, everything were left behind, which I never got back. I just ended it and he got locked up and and I just said that, you know, I'll leave those things behind, which I regret now. But, you know, I saved my life.
Was being new in the police force, did that contribute to you not feeling confident in coming out?
As a lesbian?
Yeah.
No, not at all. And after that happened, I did come out because obviously everyone knew about it. It was went over the air that, you know, police officer in trouble and all that sort of stuff. So it was well known that that happened. And I think because of that, it was easier for me to come out because I said, well, I have a new partner now and this is, and it's a woman.
Yeah.
So, but I think I would have told people anyway. And it's a process of telling people all through your life, as you know.
Yeah.
Whenever you meet someone new, you've got to say, well, my partner's a female. Mm-hmm. But no, it wasn't an issue.
So on a good note, you said you met your partner during that time.
Mm.
How did that go? Rumour is that you met online?
Yeah. Yeah, well, being in the relationship that I was and living the life that a hidden life, not being who I really am, I was searching for things online. And I really got into the television show Xena because you could see the relationship between Gabriella and Xena.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like my fantasy life where I could just get away. And I got onto a Xena fan site where you could not really chat, but you could ask questions and get responses. And I just asked a question about a particular episode that I liked. I wanted to know the name of it. And Jill responded to that. And funnily enough, it was the only time I've ever written any question or done anything on a website. And it was the only time she'd ever responded to anything. Oh. And so because she responded, we started going back and forth and then started talking about things other than Xena, and it just kind of led to where it is. We got on very well and hit it off.
Yeah, fantastic.
So you can meet good people online.
Yeah, that's a great story.
And I know a few people who've met partners online as well. But there's a lot of bad stories and you've got to be very safe when you're online meeting people.
Yeah.
But I was lucky in that circumstance. And my God, I needed it at that time in my life.
Yeah, it sounds perfect timing. And it's sometimes, you know, just meant to be.
Yeah.
You're on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Senior Constable Gabby Tyack. You're with Jess and Caroline.
And we've got another song coming up, Island Home from the beautiful Christine Arnoux. Why did you choose this song?
Well, I love Australia. And like I've said, I really, really love the bush and the outdoors. And this song just makes me think of home. And even though I know she wrote it about the Torres Strait Islands, it refers to Australia and it really makes me think of home and what I love about Australia.
Hi, I'm Carol Wilkinson. You're listening to Our Voice on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Our Voice on Joy 94.9. Our guest this evening is Senior Constable Gabby Tyack. So, Gabby, you've told us quite a powerful story, actually, about a previous relationship that you had that was very traumatic. And I guess one of the benefits of that is you, as you mentioned, having that personal experience to draw upon with your role as a GLO within the police force, which is quite special to have that connection.
Yeah, I think people in same-sex relationships find it hard to believe that they can be victims of family violence because you're the same sex as the other person. It shouldn't be a power thing, which family violence is about a lot of the time. But the thing is that it occurs within all types of relationships at pretty much the same degree. So and being in same-sex relationship also, I think people don't want the general public to think, okay, you're gay, so that's one bad thing. You've also got family violence, so that makes it even worse. So you keep things hidden more so than you would in a general heterosexual relationship. So it's an issue all across the board, and it's one, obviously, that I hold close to my heart because of my experiences, and I just see it so much through my job that, you know, people are treating their partners as possessions rather than as human beings. They can't deal with separation, and there's just a massive issue around the world.
So with the changes to the law now, where how police respond to family violence, has that made a difference? How?
Yeah, well, if a family violence incident is reported, we have to respond to it. We have to remove the offender. We have to take out intervention orders. There's a whole lot of stuff that we must do. But I was watching the ABC the other night. I think it was Four Corners. It was a story about family violence in Western Australia. And it was just incredible, the things that went on. And the woman was reporting to police and other service providers, and nothing was done. And she ended up being killed by the man, even though she told family and police that he was going to kill her. He actually did do it. So it's an issue, and it's something that police must respond to, and now we do. They're saying that family violence has increased, but it's not. It hasn't increased. It's just been reported more because we have to take it seriously. But it's also something that everyone has to respond to. If you think your neighbour or your sister or your daughter or friend is a victim, then you need to step in and help them. They won't leave the situation until they're ready to, but at least you can give them support, and support is the most important thing.
It can be difficult. I know our neighbour had a family violence issue basically in the front yard, and my partner Trish intervened, and the family is still together, and now the woman doesn't talk to us at all. And it's like 3 years ago, and we tried to engage, and I think she's embarrassed, and I just feel mortified that, you know, that's the response. But it's really difficult that, you know, she's still living her life and probably with an asshole, and you know, also doesn't recognise that you can still, you know, be friends with someone that actually did try to assist you. It is that real embarrassment.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. You don't want to acknowledge it yourself. Yeah. You want to pretend it hasn't happened. The common response is that the person who's the perpetrator will get better. It's this whole cycle. They'll be violent, they'll apologize, they won't do it again. Everything's great for a while. It's like a honeymoon period, and then it spikes up and starts all over again, and they get more and more aggressive.
And I guess we should acknowledge it's not always the man as the perpetrator, isn't it?
No.
Like in a heterosexual relationship, it can be the woman as well.
Of course. I mean, we've had police go to incidents where it is a man and a woman, it's a quite petite woman and a big, strong, muscular man, and it's the woman who's the perpetrator in that instance, but the police won't believe it because they've both hit each other.
Yeah.
But the man's been protecting himself. I mean, that's a rare thing. Majority of cases are women are the victims.
Yeah.
And in same-sex relationships, if we attend, it's difficult to know what's happening. If it's two men or two women, sometimes it's really difficult. If it's heterosexual, usually you just look at the man because he generally is the perpetrator. He's a stronger person. He has the power in the relationship in his mind. So he uses that power.
Or could that be another situation where it's what the cases that aren't being reported because of the, you know, if a man's being abused by his female partner, the pride that I guess they suffer from,
absolutely,
you know, from having to actually call the police to help them.
And that's the same for sexual assaults. If a man's a victim of a sexual assault, which is quite common, they were very, very unlikely to report that because they're a man, they should have been strong enough to fight back or to avoid the situation.
So can you tell us what led you? You've been in this role as a gay and lesbian liaison officer for 4 or so years?
4 years full-time and probably 2 years as a portfolio holder, so that's part-time.
Okay. How did you get into this role?
It was quite interesting. When I first came into it, I was at Bacchus Marsh Police Station, and there was a list of people on a wall which no one really looked at, but portfolios mean you do your general police job and then you have another thing you have to do on top of that. And there was a list of portfolio holders on the wall, and one of my colleagues said, "Oh, I'm the gay and lesbian liaison officer, and I didn't even know, and I don't know what that is." His name had just been put on this list, and apparently he'd been in that position for a few years and had no idea. So that made me think, well, come on, that's wrong. First of all, if someone's given that role, they should be doing it. They should at least know about it and be interested in it and doing it, and having an impact on that community. And because I was part of that community, I thought, well, I can give back and I have an understanding and I want to do that role. So I took the role on, ended up going down to Ballarat a bit and getting involved in local groups, youth groups, gay and lesbian youth groups, because I couldn't find anything in Bacchus Marsh, small country town. Mm. You know, unless there was occasional family violence, there was no local group or anything there. And then did some time up in Melbourne at the Gay and Lesbian Advisory Unit because I wanted to know what the job entailed. I really wanted to be good at it. And then the position where I am, which is the only full-time position in the state, came up and I went for it. And oddly enough, got it because I was the only person who went for the job.
Oh, wow. So it's not a prerequisite to be part of the GLBTI community?
No. I think sometimes it's better if you're not, because then you're a champion for the community as a heterosexual person, showing that, you know, you can be not part of the community but good at assisting the community.
But do you find it helps? Do you tell people that you're dealing with victims of crime and violence that you're a lesbian? Does that help to sort of form a confidence in the relationship?
A lot of people ask. I don't say it because I think, well, I think they'd assume that I am. Most people assume because I'm doing this role that I am.
Right.
Not all glows are, but they assume I am. But I think it helps me in a way because I have the experience. I have an understanding of what it's like to not be out, to hide things, to not trust people, which is a big reason why people in our community won't report to police, because there's that lack of trust, and that comes historically through, and also just because people don't want to be outed, don't want to be judged. They might think police are homophobic, many reasons.
So you touched on the historical side. Can you take us back to the why did the GLOWs come around? Why did Victoria Police feel that that was necessary?
Yeah, well, I guess most people know, maybe you don't, that being a homosexual was a criminal offence before 1981. So it wasn't too long ago that police were out there arresting people because they were gay, not because they were doing anything necessarily, but because they were suspected of being gay. Mm. And, you know, when things are going on like that, then it's no wonder the community doesn't trust the police. So in 1981, when it was decriminalised, it took a long time for that idea and response from police to change. So 1981, they didn't go, oh, well, you know, maybe we're not going to do anything anymore and we don't arrest anyone. They would still probably go out and arrest because they were used to that. Mm. Or they would do things, other things to arrest for other reasons, an additional offence, when it was really because they were gay. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't around then, but a lot of things were going on. There were things said in the media from, I think, the police minister in the 90s saying that Victoria Police was no place for gay people. Mm. You know, that's not too long ago. There were a lot of gay people in the police force. Mm. So that didn't go down well, and it showed the community as well that, you know, we can't trust the police. They don't want gay people in the police, so we can't trust them.
When you're getting that message from the top.
Mm. So in just before 2000, the Victoria Police and the Equal Opportunity Commission started a working group and decided, well, you're not meeting our needs. You're the police. You're meant to be meeting the needs of all the community. What can we do? So they started a working group, and from those discussions, gay and lesbian liaison officers were created. So late 2000, early 2001, the first one, Melinda Edwards came into place in Victoria Police.
And I'd have to say she's one of my heroes. She's recognised on the same website as one of the top 25 most influential GLBTI community, along with, you know, Justice Michael Kirby and Bob Brown. So she's held in high regard, and now moved to the Northern Territory and doing some fantastic work up there. And the beauty, I think, that she says now is because of her track record, she no longer has to prove herself, and people just can take on board what she's trying to do. So,
imagine the relief of the community. I mean, I was in New South Wales at this point. I didn't know any of this was going on. But for the community to realise that, hey, we've got someone in the police force who understands us and is there for us, it would have been a great relief. And then, you know, I think 2001, Christine Nixon marched in Gay Pride, and police were allowed to march in the Pride Parade in uniform, fully paid for that day. So,
were you in Victoria at that stage?
No,
not quite? No,
I moved down in late 2001 and joined late 2002.
Okay. because it was a particularly amazing response. When you hear the Vic police always get a huge roar,
yeah.
But that first year when Christine Nixon was on, like people crying, you know, on well, the sidelines. And
I missed it, but I was marching with her when she retired that year, and that she was like a rock star that year.
Yeah.
The crowd were crazy. Oh. They were crowding around her, wanting autographs and photos, and it was so. I suppose that would be a similar thing when
sure.
the first march.
Yep.
And we've had two chief commissioners since then who have marched in Pride and really have followed on from what she's done, really focusing on the community and realising that GLBTI community are important and have special needs that the police need to respond to.
Yeah, and I think it's remarkable that Ken Lay has come into the Joy Studios, and he speaks so openly, and he just sounds like a pretty amazing guy. And I think, so we've changed it at the top, and that's certainly filtering down.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Our Voice on Joy 94.9, and our guest this evening is Senior Constable Gabby Tayac. I must admit that I'm reasonably new to Australia and to Victoria, and my biggest impact with the police force would be from going to Pride March. And I do remember the Pride March you were just talking about with Christine Nixon's last one. Mm. And every year I'm in tears. I don't know if it's the band or just the whole excitement of it, but it's such a proud moment. Yeah. So you just previously mentioned that it's a full paid day for you to march in Pride. But is there a lot of excitement with the police officers gearing up to it? Because I feel that as a spectator.
We love it because when you're a police officer, generally you deal with people in terrible situations where the only time you hear anything in coming back to you is when you've done something wrong. So when you're marching in Pride and everyone's cheering you on, it's the most incredible feeling and you feel really proud that you're marching in a Pride march in uniform.
Yeah, I always think it's a great day for Melbourne. If you're a new person, GLBTI, coming out and you witness that, the amount of groups that are there, there's sporting groups and social welfare groups and even political groups. It's the one time where the Greens and the Libs and the Labor guys, they can all be marching and it's in a positive atmosphere. And
I always drag my parents down to the Pride March as well, and they get just as excited, and Dad cheers on all the vintage men. He likes that. It's great. It's
a
nice
different experience than Mardi Gras, because Mardi Gras is more of a spectacle, whereas I think Pride March is
real march.
People marching proudly for the community they are part of.
The only thing I did one year was I saw the bears marching, but I didn't realise they were bears, and they had these flags, and I thought, oh, they must love dogs. They've got all these flags with paws all over them. Anyway, I made a goose of myself that year. But anyway, that's a story for another day. So you're on Joy 94.9 with Senior Constable Gabby Tayac.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is Our Voice with Jess and Caroline, speaking with Senior Constable Gabby Tayac. We were talking about Pride March, and you've got a funny story about Pride March.
Yes, a few years ago, Jill, my partner, came along and brought our German Shepherd, Callie, and I was walking around in uniform. This is before we started the march, and we just mingle around with the crowd and have some fun. Very hot summer's day, and she's walking with the German Shepherd on the lead. The crowd was just moving out of the way, and Jill's thinking, well, I don't understand why this is happening, because Callie's really well behaved, friendly, she's not looking aggressive. And then I said, well, you're walking with a police officer and you've got a German Shepherd, so have a think. She looks like a sniffer dog. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that's a cracker.
But, I think if we go to anything now and I just wear my uniform and bring one of our dogs, we'll be able to get to the front of the queue.
Well, that's right.
Take them to a concert.
I was going to say, pity Madonna's not coming out. You get front row seats. Yeah, the whole of the front row maybe.
Well, Gabby, one of the things we like to do with our guests to help us get a bit more of an understanding of you is we ask you to bring in some memorabilia.
Yes.
And I'm just admiring what's on the desk there. If you could describe to the listener what we've got today.
Okay. Well, I've got a Premiership Cup from 2009 where Geelong beat St Kilda. And that's very special to me and Jill because we love the Geelong Football Club. And Jill had been to 5 losing grand finals.
Oh, wow, that's commitment.
Including the 2008. We didn't get to the 2007 because we couldn't get a ticket.
Who won 2008, Gabby?
Oh, don't mention that. I won't say it. I will
don't
not say
it. Don't mention the war.
But so, when we both got a ticket to 2009 from a friend's generosity who got tickets for us. We weren't able to get them in the ballot.
Wow.
Very unfair ballot. And we were there for when they beat St Kilda, and you know, it was the most amazing game. We're so close, and we were there. And I think when the final siren rang, the last minute, Jill was on the ground. She'd fallen from jumping up and down and was sitting on the ground going, how long, because we were just in front. She didn't get to see the end, but she couldn't get up. She'd lost all her strength because she was so excited and so nervous.
Wow.
So we've got that. So that's very special. And I've also got a little beef eater soft plush toy that we picked up when we went to our trip around Europe and the UK late last year. Jill's got her family from Ireland, so we went to Belfast, and my ancestry comes from Cornwall, so I thought, you know, it'd be nice to pick something up, and that's really important to me too.
They look fantastic. As always, we'll take some snaps of those and pop it on our social media page. If you want to get in touch with us, provide any feedback, have any questions for guests that we've had on previously or currently, then just head to the Joy website, joy.org.au, and you can go to the Our Voice page and connect to our social media via the link.
So, Gabby, where are you at now with the Victoria Police? What would you like to still achieve while you're there?
Well, the big thing that we want is that there will be no need for gay and lesbian liaison officers, because people will just go to any police officer and report, but that's a long way off, unfortunately, because people aren't even reporting to us a lot of the things that they should be reporting. So I think my hope in the future is that there would be less prejudice-motivated crime that is directed at a person because of different things about them, sexuality, race, religion, all that sort of stuff. I would love to be living in a world where we don't have to respond to family violence as much as we do. We don't have to respond to drunken assaults and prejudice-motivated crime.
Do you ever get disheartened?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that?
I really was, and that's why one of the reasons I took this role, and I was so glad to have this role, because you do, all you see out there is the bad in people, and you become jaded, and I became quite an angry person because every day you go to work and it's just the same thing: assaults, violence, thefts, just constantly the bad in people. So, you know, when you have police respond to an incident, we're meant to be happy and friendly, and you know, we'll come and fix that, which is what our job is. But it's hard to be upbeat like that when, for maybe you've been doing the same thing every day for 10 years.
I think that's something I've noticed. We've had so much fun in the studio this evening. You've got such a bubbly personality, but I don't want to gloss over the seriousness of your role within the police force. I know that you would speak of this with your show here on Joy on Wednesdays at the Victoria Police Community Hour, but is there anything that you really want to drive home to the listeners in regards to if you find yourself in a situation where you need help from the police, how should they go about it if they don't want to pick up the phone and call for an emergency even? So what are their options?
Well, there are GLOWs all around the state. There's probably 45 of us. I'm the only full-time one, but we're not available 24 hours a day, unfortunately. But the thing that I really want to get across is, because you're part of the GLBTR community, doesn't mean you're a less person and worth less. The police are there for everybody. So if you're in trouble, you call the police. It's as simple as that. You don't have to think, well, I'm gay, someone called me a name and then hit me. That's just what life is like, and I'll put up with it, because you're letting the person get away with it, and then you're letting them go and do it to the next person. If something happens to you, report it. You can ring 000 if it's an emergency. You can ring your GLOW. We've got on the Victoria Police website, we've got a list of contacts. Just walk into your police station. We're all trained to respond to all types of incidents.
So the rank and file police officer, they're supportive now, like generally. You know, sometimes you see, you know, the underbelly TV shows where they're still the hard and fast sort of coppers. But would you say that generally?
Absolutely. We do training and have done probably for about 5 years now with recruits in their first week about diversity, about gay and lesbian liaison, about different issues for different communities. If you do get a bad response, look, there's probably about 13,000 police officers in Victoria Police. There's going to be people that have their own prejudices. We're told we have to leave them out of our work, but it's not always possible. So if you do get a bad response, you can ring Aglow and let them know. There are ways to make complaints and respond to those sorts of incidents. But I urge you to contact the police if you need them, no matter what the situation is.
Just on a personal experience, I have had to call for the police for assistance in a very distressing time, and it's so daunting to pick up the phone and dial the number. But what I found is when the police officers actually arrived at my house, their manner in which they addressed the situation and made me feel just like a person. I was having trouble with a girlfriend at the time, and it wasn't an issue. And I was, all of my judgments that I'd had about being embarrassed and it was going to be a big drama, it was a very serious situation. But I think sometimes when you're in that situation, you put more pressure on yourself thinking what's going to happen. When at the end of the day, I've been lucky enough to deal with people much like yourself, Gabby, just normal people doing their job, looking after people in need. So I have great respect for the Victorian Police and for what you do. I think it's incredible.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
No one should be thinking about, like what you were thinking, you know, am I going to be embarrassed? If you're in trouble, that's from when you're a child, you're told if you're in trouble, call the police. It's the same when you're an adult. If you're in trouble, you call the police. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
You're on Joy 94.9, listening to with Senior Constable Gabby Tyack, Jess and Caroline. And we have a track to play, and it's from your favourite pop star that you've been stalking over the years.
Oh, I don't stalk her anymore. I've grown out of that. Yes, Madonna. It's called Love Spent. It's from her latest album, and it's all about being in a relationship where her, I think it's about Guy Ritchie, where he has all the money. He has pubs, women, fast cars and all that sort of thing, and she wants him to treat her the way he treats his money, because he treats his money like it's gold and it's the best thing. And so it's about being in a relationship and treating someone like a person rather than a possession.
You are listening to Our Voice with Caroline Vogels and Jess Morhy on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, listening to Senior Constable Gabby Tyack. We've just heard Madonna, and we're going to finish off our show with our fun little questions. So, Gabby, who's your favourite GLBTI icon?
No, Madonna. She has a big gay following, mainly men and me.
Name one thing on your bucket list.
Okay, going to Cornwall, because when I went to Europe and in UK last year, I didn't get there.
If you could be anywhere in the world, where would you be right now?
I like it cold. It's cold here, but I'd probably go to Alaska.
What makes you laugh, Gabby?
Being with friends, funny. I don't like jokes. You told a joke earlier. It wasn't that funny. Sorry,
really
Jess.
Funny.
But I like just humour, having fun with people, just funny things.
If you could go back in time to any decade, which would it be?
That's tough. Maybe the 20s. The 20s was an interesting time, watching Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
That's where I'm getting that feeling from.
Yeah. Sorry. Would you hang out with all the gangsters?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, totally.
Wearing those shoes.
Yeah, I'd probably dress like them.
Yeah.
And carry a gun.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
I do that now, don't I?
Yeah. What's one word you could use to describe your life?
Interesting.
What's your favourite hobby?
Bushwalking.
What's your favourite movie?
I don't really have one. They change with the times, but I can tell you my favourite TV show, if that helps. True Blood. Love it. Someone else in the room loves it too.
Andy, our faithful panel off, yeah, is bouncing around in his chair.
What's the most outrageous thing you have ever done?
Well, would it be jogging with Madonna?
Yeah, I was going to say.
That might be it.
Well, what's the best experience of your life so far?
Obviously, meeting my partner is a pretty damn great experience, but going and travelling Europe and UK with her, it was fantastic, because she's not much of a traveller, doesn't like to be away from home for too long. So it was amazing to spend 3 or so weeks travelling countries like that with her, which I never thought would happen.
Are you married?
No.
If it were legal, would you be married?
I'd happily get married, but Jill's not keen on marriage. She thinks it's a sort of a...
heterosexual.
Yeah, and so did you see that Tasmania looks like they're going to be the first state to legalise same-sex marriage? I'm thinking, cool, I'll go.
Yeah.
Or I'll wait till it happens here. We'll see. I would get married, but it's not something that, a lot of people think marriage is the be-all and end-all and they want to be married, but for me, don't care really either way.
And Gabby, what's your star sign?
Capricorn.
You've been listening to Senior Constable Gabby Tyack on Our Voice. Gabby's really shared part of her life's stories and journeys and been very open with, sometimes I think we think police officers maybe don't have a life and that everything's always been perfect, but you've been, you know, sharing some really heartfelt stories and also some of the joys of the job, and we really appreciate that. And we thank you for coming on Our Voice.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jess.
You have been listening to Our Voice on Joy 94.9. For more information, head to joy.org.au to connect with Our Voice online.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.